Hello, the recording is started. You can go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll just quickly start to the roll call. On the call today, we have Abri Doria. We have Graham Newis. Sorry, Graham, if I didn't pronounce it correctly. From staff, we have Ken Bauer, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Thank you.
Oh, has Cheryl not called in? I thought she was about to.
I'll check where she is.
Yes, she is trying to call in. She doesn't have the details. I will give her the details on IM. You know, we were just in another call together and chatting. She's in Australia, right? Australia. Oh, there's all these Australian numbers. Which is she? I don't know. I'll send them all. And yes, this is all being recorded. Okay, I sent her the information. She'll be joining us shortly. So, Ken, others, where are we in this? I know that we've got your, you know, you put something out, and I guess you then revised it and put in titles and numbers and all kinds of good stuff, and then I added a bunch of comments, a few other people added a bunch of comments, and what do we need to do to finish this? Just walk through the comments and decide what to do?
Yeah, I think that's one, sure, is to reconcile the comments where they are in some difference of opinion about whether this what this means, what it should say, whether it should even be in there, that kind of stuff. And then once the outline is, we're pretty happy with the outline, then obviously we start the drafting task. And, you know, that will have its own set of challenges, I'm sure, but that would be the next thing to do. That's what we were hoping to get done in the last 3 weeks, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not... Okay, I guess I quite don't understand. Okay. Well, I actually think in the discussion, we have much of the content of what would be in the thing, and also I guess I question on how much more we need than an annotated outline. In other words, we need an outline of the things that people would have to put into a charter, and then we may need a sentence or two just giving them a clue about what kinds of things belong there. Or do you see us needing much more content, and if so, why?
I don't necessarily see that a lot of content needs to be created, and that's what I meant when I said that will create its own set of challenges. Moving into the drafting phase will, I think, generate that very question. So how much content do we need? Recognizing who the audience is here. So if this particular document, the Charter Drafting Guidelines and Implementation and so forth, if the audience is the sponsoring organization, in this case the GNSO Council, does it really need three pages of textual description for every bullet item? The answer is almost assuredly no, right? I think that's where you're coming from, and I would tend to agree. So it'll be a little bit of how much is enough. And the other thing that I'd like to keep in mind is that this document ought to be, it seems to me, a living document, meaning that it doesn't have to just get written and then stay, you know, version 1.0 forever. Down the road, if somebody thinks that, you know, it'd be helpful to have more content in this section, that could be written and added, right? And then we go to version 1.1. And so I think the big goal to get to think about now is getting something that is useful into the council's hands with respect to creating implementations and to implementing working groups and giving them charter documents to work from.
Yeah, well, I guess. Yeah, and please, hopefully others will jump in so it doesn't end just the Ken and Aubrey show. But I think in one sense we already have the outline, and we may drop things from it. I don't know if anyone really objects. I know some of the places I said this need to be there, and if we get to a point where there's a consensus that no, it doesn't need to be there, then it gets dropped. If there's a consensus that yes, of course it needs to be there, then it remains. And so I think we're actually already kind of in that second stage, because if I look at the comments that we've got, they're about, well, what are we talking about here? Well, what goes in here? And so on. So I think we can almost jump to this, to the next stage of trying to write those two, three lines of guideline or the paragraph of guideline and see how far it goes. On the second point, I view every document as a living document that change on time. And I think that's one of the reasons why I personally am a relative minimalist on this kind of document, because at this point we're giving clues. We have some ideas from four or five working groups that have existed, or from the advice given us from IETF and from W3C. But until I can really internalize this whole notion of working groups and using that as a working method, we won't know what it evolves into and how to basically keep that evolution productive. So that's why I tend to be a minimalist, and why I think we're actually much closer to being done than I think it looks like.
Yeah, I would agree. I really like the outline, and I think that, you know, just kind of synthesizing those comments into a few, I'd almost even put them in brackets and just, you know, as suggested content for each one of these bullet points, and kind of like, you know, what it suggested things that it should cover to give a little more meat, and then maybe also suggestion that while all these things are, we think that they potentially belong in the type of direction that should be given to the working group in the by the charter, that if something doesn't apply or doesn't make sense in the context of the working group issue, then people can just put in NA or not applicable, so that, you know, we're not forcing the creation of work or the development of content for inclusion in the charter just to, for the sake of producing something itself, and that it really is tied to whether or not there's a specific relevant, this is what we think is going to be relevant for each charter, but, you know, if it's not relevant, then people should just say that they thought about it and decided it wasn't relevant to include a discussion of it.
All that sounds great to me.
One thing that we may actually do on some of these, we may want to, or not we but necessarily, but, you know, the full working team itself may want to designate some as optional and some as required. For example, you know, things like milestones, we'd probably want to say required. Things like mission statement, we might want to say optional or not. I just picked one out of the air. I'm not trying to argue that point at the moment. And then some of them, you know, so that may be an intermediate also in that consideration.
So the one thing that I suggest, do we want to kind of, do we think on this call that we need to digest some of the comments, or do we think that maybe the next good step is to just kind of farm out and have each person kind of take responsibility for one of the elements and synthesizing the comments into, you know, some of that proposed advisory language?
I guess once we figure, my view is it would be, once we figure out how we're proceeding, I think, yeah, going into each of the comments and talking them through. One question I have is whether we actually want to farm out the writing of these, or whether after this discussion, and can you tell me whether this is within scope of your contracted work, whether it wouldn't be reasonable to ask you to take the discussion and what you've heard and craft some suggested wording that then we would, you know, edit on the wiki and work with you, but have you plant the first seed, as it were. Or do we follow the I'll take 2.1, you take 2.2 procedure? But I don't know what's within your contracted scope.
Either I can absolutely support either one. The contract is silent on such matters, and I know Denise well enough, but now after 9-10 months of working with her, that if whatever moves the group forward, the most effectively and efficiently, she would be all for. So if the group thinks that if I should take a stab at writing some draft language to go in these things, and that's what the group wants to do, I think that's going to be supported.
Plant the seed.
Yeah. And basically, especially if we have the conversation now and stop talking about process and get into some content, if we, you know, have had a discussion here and you're basically able to take a combo of the comments plus the discussion we have and produce the resulting text, I think that that would probably move it quicker than waiting for me to write 2.2 and someone else to write 3.4.
Yeah, I quite agree. And like I said, I'm happy to do that. And especially
since it's in a wiki, I think we'd have no compunctions against offering alternative language. If, you know, I know I would have no compunction against offering alternative language, hoping that others would have the same lack of compunction.
So let's get into it.
Okay. So.
1.1.
1.1.
That seems to me to be all we need right there.
Well, I like I said, again, if I were to have the pen for initial draft, I would write a paragraph under background that would cite, you know, a few of the BGC report. It would just be, it wouldn't be very long or extensive, but it would give a few references to, you know, how this sort of thing came into being, and not difficult work and easy to edit, and but I wouldn't make it extensive.
Yeah, and the other thing is on just the drafting of them, maybe we want to offer some kind of, you know, suggested length there. I don't know. Do we want to?
No, let's keep in mind something.
Okay.
That's a great point. I just want to get my own head straight on here. What we are drafting, right, is the set of charter implementation and drafting guidelines that we would turn over to someone like the GNSO Council that would inform them when it came time to write the first charter for a real working group.
This is where I think I have a slightly different view. I think that we're talking not only about giving it to the GNSO that writes the initial charter, but from the practice that we've seen lately, sometimes it is a drafting team, sometimes it is an ad hoc group that's proposing a charter for an activity.
That's fine. Yeah, in fact, that's the reason I wanted to use terms like sponsoring organization, not GNSO Council, other than GNSO Council as an example of a specific customer of such a document.
I think it's in general community. There may not even be an organization. And I can see, and this is from looking at things like other groups, that very often, for example, within the ITF, and Jan is not here, but I have 20 years of ITF, is that often a group of people will sit down together and think, you know, I really think the group, in that case ITF, or in this case ICANN GNSO, should be working on X. And they sit down and they propose working on X, and they scope out a charter. Now, this charter has no particular, you know, legitimacy yet, other than as a proposal. But what we're saying to people is, if you think work really needs to be done, and you think a working group needs to be developed, well, then here's a way of telling us what you think needs to be done. So I think the scope is wider than supporting organizations.
Okay.
So it's like a drafter. So to assist the drafter of this charter.
Exactly. And leave open who it might be that a year and a half from now is drafting a charter.
Okay. And all of that's great, and I understand. What I was simply trying to, I want to just be clear in my mind that this document is a set of guidelines for whoever it is who is wanting to propose, craft, or recommend a charter for some other purpose, right?
Yeah.
This is the set of guidelines they would draw upon in the preparation of that charter document.
The group of people, whoever it is, picks up this document and says, all right, this is what, if I take this form and follow the advice that's in it, I'm going to produce something that the people in the community will generally understand as a good basis for a charter.
Okay, I think I understand that, and we might end up as we crawl through here with a little bit of a challenge because I thought about it initially and built sections in, thinking that there was always going to be a sponsoring organization that said to some other group, go write this charter, go draft this charter. And if it can also come from a wellspring of interest that has no such sponsor, then some of what the material that I put in here that deals with things like, you know, how should you name and announce and advertise this working group that you're going to, that's, I'm not sure where that stuff gets put. But anyway, we'll come to it.
I mean, I think at the end of a day, when a working group is chartered, we'll need those things. So it's really there's a duality in it.
Okay. Well, so far so good. I can write a background section that'll work. And then we said intend an audience and purpose, and this is where we're going to do some changing, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I was talking 1-2 while the rest of you were talking 1-1. I apologize.
No problem. So what we want to do is to get rid of the idea of the organization. And is it okay to say sponsor? I mean,
well, yes, it can be sponsor. And I mean, I have absolutely no issue with saying sponsoring organization or other. It's just I'm looking for more of an inter alia type of statement, including but not restricted to type of statement on who the community of interest is. And that was really my general point, is let's not restrict it just to them, but of course it may be them.
Okay. What I'm doing is I've copied the wiki, put it into a Word document, and as we go through it, I'm making notes, and I'll just edit my own little. And when I come back to it, then I'll be able to interpolate, synthesize, and we can take the comments out, and then I will have captured where we are.
But you'll bring it back into wiki for the group.
I will bring it back into wiki. Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that is not quite as easy as it should be.
Yeah.
Okay.
That phone call that I just got indicated that I am going to need to leave the call in about 7 minutes, so I apologize, but there was a work issue came up.
Okay, so we can continue through. It is being recorded, so I do invite you to listen to it.
Yes,
and
I will.
Just keep following.
I also look forward to looking at Ken's fully drafted comments.
Okay, good. So the intended audience and purpose will be generalized so that it recognizes that it's not only a sponsor, but it could also be any ad hoc group that wants to propose a charter would also be able to use these guidelines. I think I got that point. Is there anything else in that audience and purpose? Is the purpose okay? I mean, it's providing a set of guidelines, checklists, templates, best practice materials. I mean, that's all of that material is okay? Okay,
yeah,
good.
The only thing I would say is guiding a proposed working group as opposed to a working group. You know? Oh, okay. Never mind. I misread it. Never mind.
Okay. How about we move to structure?
Yeah.
Structure, yeah.
What did I say here? Okay,
yeah.
This would...
AUTOC.
I would just call it a table of contents. And I would actually put that maybe up at the top. Maybe that make table of contents 1.
Okay, so suggestion is to make table of contents number, move AUTOC to the top. Yeah, that makes sense to me. but we think we should have, obviously, a table of contents, and that we'll put that up at the top, take it out of, so we don't need to have a structure, really. 1.3 doesn't need to exist, right?
Yep.
Okay. Revisions.
1.4, I would really recommend that we just say it's a living document and will be modified, based on experience, and then just sort of say something and, this is a problem for the GNSO in the future, but not try to determine now what the process will be for reviewing or perhaps suggesting that it be reviewed in a year, according to GNSO processes or something like that.
What? I guess the question for me on revisions is this, does this refer to previous, like when you get to the end of the day and you have a charter? Does this say, okay, there's a previous version of this charter that exists?
This refers
to, hey, there was a previous version of the charter guidelines.
Right. Yeah. So let's say we called the implementation and charter drafting guidelines version 1.0, and it contains all the material we're working our way through and so forth. Right. We're done. We say this is the first version of it. When somebody who's actually working with the draft guidelines says, you know, there really needs to be a section in here for such and such that was omitted when these guys put it together, they would have a methodology or they would know what to do to get this version 1.0 to a 1.1 and incorporate that new provision.
Well,
I kind of like the idea of saying something along the lines of this is, you know, this charter, you know, it is suggested that you reference, you know, that this charter was based on the Charter Drafting Guidelines 1.0, because then in each one, people will, you know, there'll be a version of it, and each charter that exists, there'll be a statement that says this was based on 1.0, you know, subsequent ones will say this one was based on 2.0, and that way if someone gets an old form or something like that, or starts to, you know, it uses a previous model of something that has become antiquated, that, you know, you can see where the missing elements are going to be.
I think I understand. It's almost like the charters that get written should reference the draft guideline version that it was spawned from.
Yeah, exactly. So that everyone who's reading it says, oh, okay, this is what I can expect out of this, and it's, or I can note to myself, hey, now aren't we on 1.3, and this one was used on the model based on the 1.2 model?
Yeah, I see the point, and it's an interesting one because you could have a working group, and there have been some that have lasted for years, and the drafting guidelines could evolve to a 2.7 before the first working group actually closes. And if there was some learnings that came out of things that might actually retroactively affect a pre-existing group, it would be nice to know what charter guideline they came from. Yeah. That's interesting.
It's a quality systems issue. Right. I would recommend. I'd like to comment on two things. I didn't cut you off, did I? Carol, I just want to make sure.
No. I was just saying. Yeah, version control is a quality systems issue and needs to be
I would,
implementation.
Yeah, I would recommend. First of all, I think the question that came up as an example on that somebody putting in a section that wasn't prescribed, I think that should obviously be fine. If somebody wants to put something extra in a charter, you know, there should be no, you know, barriers to doing that because different groups might require a different thing. So I think it is important to say that these are, you know, recommendations. If people need to add other stuff to a charter, that. The other thing is, I think it's almost like university graduate requirements in that when you enter a university, you either get to graduate based on the rules that were in existence when you started or the latest set of rules. And that basically a charter written under an old charter guideline is still valid, or if it wants to, it can update to the latest.
I wouldn't think that it would be binding. It's just basically a way for people out in the community who are reading a charter to know why it might not have stated something or why it stated something that has since become antiquated. So it's just a way to kind of understand what you're reading, give you a little guideline. And also, I think if this is the kind of document that gets copied and put out into the internet places, people can check and see if they're getting the most updated one.
Yeah.
Now, what I would actually recommend, I do this, I've done this in a number of templates that I've created for ICANN in my role. At the very bottom, the last section, I generally call it like amendments, and it's a little table, just got maybe four columns, version number, date, who, and what. So it's a way to keep track of. So version 1 was the first one, and version 1, what was changed. It's what Cheryl, I think, was talking about, it's sort of version control. And we can put a section like that little table as the last section, and I can stick that on the wiki so people can look and see what that looks like. Now you have a running way to know how many versions there have been and what each one largely did. You know, the version 1.7 added a section something or other, because it was missing and needed to be, and people thought that it should be in all charters, right?
Yeah, no, that sounds good.
Okay,
I apologize for leaving early, and we'll look forward to reading all this stuff, and thank you guys for continuing to work.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Hi. So far, so good for revisions.
Okay. So we're now down to something.
Now we're at mission, purpose, and deliverables. And so we had some comments here. Okay, this is where I guess I recommended the new title.
Mm. Right. So working group, implementation and charter drafting guidelines. And basically I think my comment was, it's a bit of a long title, but yeah. Oh, why not?
Okay. All right. Well, then if that's the case, I can probably just get rid of all these comments, right?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to...
Guys, you've all got to look at the potential for Google Wave, as released last week, for doing this in a much more intelligent way in collaboration. I'm very excited about that.
Is that a progression on the Google Docs?
No, God no. It's nothing, I mean, makes Google Docs look like...
One more time, Cheryl. What was it called? Google what?
Wave?
Google Wave.
WAVE, okay.
Yeah,
I was just
released. Just go http://wave.google.com and know that I've sat on this, having had many coffees with one of the engineers for the last 2 years, and it is going to make this sort of work so good. And I've suggested that our ICANN community could beta test it, and I hope that comes off.
I'll take a look at it today. The policy staff's constantly in need of this sort of thing.
Well, you won't be surprised when you get to the end of the presentation that a real-time 40-language, letter-by-letter language interpretation tool happens to be included. Will you, Ken?
I'm more than willing to play with new toys.
Yeah,
lovely new toy, but this, exactly what we're doing now, would be made so much easier using these types of APIs when they're developed.
Yeah, we agree. All right, well, we'll just continue to clobber through this one the way we've been doing it. I'm ready to go to 2.1, mission, focus area, scope. We had some comments there. So, Aubrey said every charter needs a mission and scope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then I commented, do we need to add any guidance here about, you know, what constitutes a well-written mission statement? And Aubrey said, if it's short and crisp and a couple of bullets...
Understandable.
That one's not too controversial. I think I can create something that works with that.
I think you'll find a lot of my comments are like that.
Yeah, and I think what I'll do in the first iteration here is I will err on the side of brevity. Right? And first, it'll make my job easier to do. And secondly, if somebody goes, well, that doesn't really add any, then we can certainly add more. And is that okay?
I think that's perfect.
Okay.
Ken, while you're writing this, can you just, I know it's me doing what you probably are now expecting me to do quite frequently, can you just whack some of these brief points into Google Translate and see how it goes out into English and Spanish and Mandarin and whether or not we lose the intention in the interpretation?
But wouldn't he have to be able to read that language to know that?
No, not at all. You go forward and backward and it
Oh, okay.
I've never done it, Cheryl. I'm always willing to learn a new trick, and if you could tell me who I might chat with, who can just give me a quick little tutorial or a guidance as to where I might go to do that and how I do it, I'd be happy to give that a try.
Yep. Yeah. Sure. No problem. It's just when we're writing something that's at the high level, someone in a non-English speaking background to be able to not misinterpret and go off on a total sideline.
Is this something that Matthias might have done or does regularly?
Yep.
I can ask Matthias.
Nick and I could probably really talk to half our community without Google Translate.
So Google Translate. Oh, so that's another tool. All right. I missed that. Okay. Got it. All right. Let me look into that.
Mm.
So you don't need to do any more. I'll take it from there.
Thanks, Tom. You know where I live anyway.
All right. So how about 2.2, objectives and goals?
I think it's the same comment pretty much as before.
Okay. Yeah. Keep it brief. The guidelines just need to be brief.
Yep. And I think the extra word that I've added here, and I had in both of them, is that we have to make sure that these things are guidelines, they're not constraining,
correct,
you know, et cetera, that we can't currently envision all the uses that this might be put to. And I guess, and this is a total aside, I mean, my normal profession is protocol designer, and one of the things that one always has to keep in mind is the uses this will be put to that you can't conceive of now.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think of these things as a skeleton. They're essential for the thing to stand up and move as designed, but what gets hung off them is variable and fit to purpose.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, it might be possible I could write something even up in the general section almost a disclaimer, like section 1.4, 1.5 disclaimer that says, you know, the intention of this document is to do exactly that, provide guidelines. So it is not, and then we've covered it one time at the top, and then we can just ignore it therefore thereafter. All right, so going to import, impact, priority. And I did, as you could tell, I sort of was throwing the kitchen sink at this thing. You know, look, I was just like, what are all the possible things I could think of that might go into a guideline for somebody writing a charter? We don't have to put all these in here. This one, Avery says, seemed like overkill. And that was seconded. And then what did I say? Not so much need to know, but is it helpful for a working group that's being commissioned to have some sense of the priority, the import, the value that this work has to the community? It was more about that.
I can tell you why I think it's problematic, and part of the reason I think it's problematic is perhaps from even a council deciding to approve something. I think that we can get to agreement on what they will do and what the milestones are and what their mission is crisply. Once we start to talk about why is this important, why should I care, et cetera, we get into a much less crisp, murkier area where each constituency, each group coming to the work, has a different reason why they're going to approve it and think it's worthwhile. And there'll be surrounding dialogue. There'll be call recordings. There'll be motions. There'll be all kinds of things that have this background information. But a charter is, while it's not a legal document, in some sense it's kind of like one. And to try and include all of this sort of mushy, indeterminate stuff that brings in intentionality and a separate one becomes problematic for the group trying to approve a charter.
I'm just capturing a few thoughts. That's persuasive to me. You have a lot of experience with the creation of these groups, and so you know, missioning them and objectivizing them, however you say it, putting goals and things like together is determinate. But in terms of like why, how should we? Maybe we should just leave this out.
Avery, I wanted to pick up on what was your last dot point in there, and I guess that's from a little sort of pseudo-historian point of view. If a charter, when it is disassociated at a later date from its normal context, has reference to at least some of its formative prioritising information, like the motions, etc., that you're mentioning in the last dot point under 2.3, it really makes it easy to put the puzzle back together when you're not coming from a informed, internalized point of view, when you're coming from an outsider looking at it and trying to make sense of it point of view?
Yeah, and perhaps, you know, there is good reason for separate synthesis documents that are, you know, the end game, the things that get presented to boards when PDPs are completed and stuff. Mm. As a
but
person
they
who,
need to be somehow tethered,
right?
As in some way,
that,
shape, or form.
Right. As a person that writes synthesis reports part time for a living, you know, that's
God,
what I do.
I'm preaching
at the,
to
that's
the
what I do at the UN. I write synthesis reports. One of the problems with a synthesis report is you always have to figure out what to leave out. You're always taking a, no matter how neutral you try to be, the fact that you are synthesizing leaves out content that may be important to someone else. So having something that can be referred to, having documents that explain these things, is probably a good idea. Having them as part of a charter or required for a charter is one of the places where I'm concerned and worried.
Because
well,
it'd be hard to write
them. Link? How do they ever link to a charter? How do in a retrofitted trying to put it all back together view? How would I link a specific charter with, for example, outcomes and synthesis documents?
Well, certainly it's certainly linked to its motion.
Okay, so really at the very minimum we need the motion-to-motion linkage within the charter.
Right, I think actually, yeah, I think including a pointer to the motion that approves the working group as something that's done at the end.
And then you can follow a treaty out, which is fine, as long as there's that actual cross-linkage.
Right, so yeah, putting in the motion that approves this. You know, this charter was created by, I mean, this working group was created by motion law, and then appointed to that motion. That is probably good. And then from there, yeah, you can follow the rest of the trail.
Where would I put that, ladies? Where do you think it belongs in this structure, in this outline?
I actually think it's part of the mission.
Yeah, right up the top.
Right. You know, the mission statement is a brief paragraph that's probably very similar to what was in the motion.
All right. For now, I will just add a comment up at the very top of 2.0 that says insert something.
Either a pointer. I think a pointer is probably more useful, or maybe you insert the motion and its pointer as a trailhead. And I don't think where we place things is all that critical at the moment. We can always do a cut and paste resort once we see what it looks like.
Okay. I've captured the idea. I'll try to figure that out. Let's see. Very good. Are we all right. So we're gonna eliminate what was originally in 2.3. So the good. And maybe the next one is similar, success criteria. My original thought there in the second bullet was that, you know, it, as a sponsor of a potential work group or somebody that's creating a team to do something, are there any success criteria, or if there are success criteria, should there be a place for them in the charter?
And what I was basically saying is the milestones and deliverables are the success criteria.
Okay.
In an objective sense.
Okay.
Anything else, again, gets us back into that fuzzy, what does my constituency want to see come out of this?
Milestones and deliverables. I'm making a note to remind myself are the... And they're covered in the next, they're covered later, they're covered in 2.
I mean, one of the things that's important to point out to people about milestones and deliverables is that they end up the borders, they define the borders of what work can and can't be done. And when a working group wants to go beyond its chartered deliverables, it needs to go, and unless it can substantiate that something is a precursor to a deliverable, it needs to go back to, you know, the chartering organization and say, hey, you know, we need an extra deliverable to work on.
Okay, yeah, right. And for sure, yeah, for sure we would, as we get down here, I think we've covered the idea that that any working group would have, their charter would have a clause in it that says, if you need more help, go back to your sponsor. It hardly needs to be said, but it probably could be said.
Well, it needs to be said that deliverables are a constraint.
Okay.
And one of the things that, you know, I've seen happen often in groups in the IETF is there are quite legitimate other things they want to work for. And, you know, in that case, it's the IESG who's the approving, the chartering organization, says, yep, 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 all good ideas, and we'll talk about it when you finish what's on your plate already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of statement is sometimes necessary.
Okay, so did we morph into 2.5?
I think they were pretty close together.
Yeah, all right, so I'm going to clobber 2.4, and 2.5, again, I can write a very short paragraph. Right. This brief is the rule that basically just says that this section of the charter would contain outcomes, products, and deliverables. And do we want to go as far as to say that those deliverables represent a constraint to the working group, or?
Yeah, I think so.
Otherwise, you get scope creep, which is never a good thing.
Right. And that's just it. The deliverables are by being strict about deliverables and negotiating them carefully, you never completely prevent scope creep, but you hopefully reduce it.
God, we can only try.
Yeah, so you guys really have a lot of experience with the creation of these real teams, and I'm doing it largely from an academic point of view in other working group things that I've been involved in, in which case we would have success criteria, but it's a different, ICANN does represent a completely different sort of model here, and so this is helpful to me.
And success is delivering, the best success is delivering your deliverables, meeting your milestones, and doing it in the constrained amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody meets that, but
yeah,
you know, that's
that would be a successful outcome, I take it, right? All right, so let's see, 2.6 then, durations, time frames, key milestones, and extensions. It may be that 2.5 and 6 can...
2.1.
Yeah, combined.
Yep.
Let me just make that comment, combine with 2.5. Is there any point, are there any notes in here that are critical? Let me think.
No. I mean, other than... You know, I was questioning the sponsor terminology, but we've already talked about that.
Okay. All right, good.
Certainly there is the notion of, and this is perhaps one of the things you were getting at with the sponsor, is there is a chartering organization. And there is a relationship between the working group and the chartering group. They're not necessarily the sponsor, you know, but they're the ones that approve charters. So the GNSO Council... In GNSO working groups, and hopefully this is useful to other people, but the GNSO group, you know, the GNSO is the chartering organization for GNSO working groups.
Who would the sponsor be?
I assumed
that they were, that meant the same thing. I intended to mean sponsor as chartering organization.
Okay. It was my misunderstanding. I would actually use then in those places where we're talking about the relationship between working group and chartering organization to call it that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have any particular. I'm not wedded to the term sponsor. It was the only word I could think of. We can substitute chartering organization for sponsor everywhere.
Yeah, Ken, the only thing that came across my mind was a parallel between what I tend to be involved in the telco code development parts in Australia and what can happen in an ICANN setting where the mandate for a working group and its outcome will actually come from something that isn't necessarily the chartering body. So, for example, in the telco industry here, our regulator will say, thou shalt, and then the industry self-regulatory body we'll form a working group to make the shell happen.
So is the first group the sponsor and the second the chartering organization?
Exactly. No, in fact, first group I wouldn't be talking in terms of sponsor. Sponsor has a more friendly annotation to it.
The regulator.
They're a regulator, and they bloody well have done.
And here at the board is the regulator.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking of those parallels with the board.
Right. And one of the reasons I think in terms of the charting, for example, we could get a mandate either from the telecoms or from the board to do something, and the GNSO could decide to cut it up into four pieces.
Yep.
And
just make
they would
it
be the chartering organization for a project, but they would want each one to stick to its own compartment.
Yep.
Whether that was reasonable or not, beside the point.
Then maybe we can just ignore for the time being. Right? These are guidelines that really are going... The chartering organization is going to have the responsibility to create the charter. And regardless of whether there are 10 sponsors, one sponsor, 12 regulators, or whatever, is a bit out of scope for respect to these guidelines, right? So we can just... Our audience, then, is the chartering organization.
And the writers of charters.
And the writers of charters, right? The draft, whoever the drafters are, even if they're
an
ad hoc group.
The community that wants to understand why a charter says what it says.
Okay, I think I got that. Okay, good. So 2.5 and 2.6 will just get merged together and become one. Then 2.7, again, like I was kitchen sink this thing, do ICANN working groups, do their charters need to say anything about budgets or finances or dollars or expenditures or anything like that?
I think only if we're giving them a budget. But by and large, I think that's a GNSO management problem if we get that far.
Do you ever give working groups budgets?
Not that I've ever thought of. Nor
You've got IRT experience recently, Avery, where there was expenditure mandated in terms of support from extraordinary budget expenditure of the board.
That's true.
Well, what I could do here is to draft something simple that says, you know, to the extent that the chartering organization needs to give allocations of funds to the working group, this is where it would go.
Right. And then just this one would definitely be one that was marked as optional.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
As required, use only if needed.
Yeah. I'll add that. Use as required, right. Okay. So I think I got that. Formation, staffing, and organization. Here we go. 3.1 membership criteria. All right, so my note was adding what I was thinking in my head at the time is, might there be in a particular working group case, so back to the people who are doing the chartering and the drafting, are there times when there are specific types of skill sets or particular types of membership in the working group that where you might specify that kind of thing?
I think yes. And they can be in a number of ways. They can be minimum requirements or absolutely balanced, where you've got something where you need, for example, a supply and demand balanced outcome. You might need to specify a balance in the working group makeup where supply and demand is numerically balanced. Where you've got, for example, security and stability issues that need to be considered on something or intellectual property issues that need to be considered on something, then clearly it's a whole lot smarter if you have a subset of your working group with those particular technical expertise, but they don't need to necessarily be on a ratio basis.
So why don't I take a stab at writing something general? But again, now I'm not being prescriptive. We're just saying when you write a charter, you should have a membership section. And to the extent that you need something particular other than just, hey, we don't really care, whoever wants to join and work on this can. But if there is any set of specific expertise, criteria, skills, balancing, or membership that needs to be on this working group, this is where you would say it.
Yes. For example, I mean, I've had experiences where we had codes in the telco industry here in Australia being written for consumer codes, without any consumer input. Interestingly enough, we got back turned over, and then we had to fight for a 50-50 relationship because what we had was, you know, huge law firms retained by, you know, major telco companies coming in literally against a retired volunteer. So we needed to structure those working groups very deliberately to make equity of representation and put in independent chair people and drafters, professional drafters. So it's sort of fit for purpose again.
Yes, I think so. What this section could end up turning out to be is really just a set of thoughtful questions, right? Things that the drafters might consider when they're in this working on the membership criteria.
There's one other thing that probably needs to be added, and this is a boilerplate statement almost.
Almost, yeah.
And that is that it is open to anyone in the ICANN community without defining that one. But you might want to add who has not otherwise been eliminated from prior working groups for cause.
I'm right, I'm typing.
I don't know how you would say that.
I think the way you said it isn't bad.
But you probably want to put that in, you know. And that doesn't mean that those people can never get into a working group again. It just means that they're not automatically in.
Yeah. Okay. I have enough on that, I think, to get us a paragraph or two that will help on 3-1. Everybody okay on that?
Mm-hmm.
3-2? Now, what was useful metadata for the council? Dependencies. Okay, I didn't really add any thoughts to that. Happy to take 3-2 out if we don't think we need it.
Yeah, the only thing that was mentioned there is dependencies. If there are, and this could be an optional thing, if there are several working groups working on similar problems, then
that needs to be noted. Yeah.
It might be noted, but, you know, and that was the comment that came in after mine. So, you know, first I said it's not useful.
I think if it needs to be noted with the advisory that time course, milestones, etc., therefore can be validly adjusted. You know, if you've got a major codependent activity that has been held up for very good reasons, then it is utter madness to force completion on the allied ones.
Yeah, and again, it may just be that it would be, maybe 3.1 can have Section A, Section B, and we can talk about it. Instead of making a whole section out of dependencies, it's a membership formation issue. I take it dissolution...
Well, that we need to come up with probably a standard. I think the basis that I'm looking at the GNSO is that every working group needs to have its charter reviewed, you know, and I'm not sure what the periodicity is. Some people try to say 6 months, and I think that's what we've put in some places. I tend to think, you know, we barely have time to blink in 6 months. So I think it's yearly, but there may be all, you know, as with all charters, they need to be reviewed on a yearly basis or some basis. So
maybe
that's not
they
the
need
solution,
to establish a basis for review as part of their charter.
Yeah, do the working groups instantiate that review, or does the council manage that process and ask the group? I mean, that might be in a council rules procedure versus
in a council. That really should be council. But it should be noted that the working group better be ready for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That might be rules. I wonder if that goes down under rules of engagement somewhere.
And perhaps one would even want to suggest that on a yearly basis, you know, they need to give I don't know.
But, see, I mean, not all working groups go on forever. I mean, some, you know...
They tend to unless you stop them.
Well, that's where I'm sort of getting to. You need to stop some of them, particularly if you're having a fairly large number of them working and you're going to be recycling the same suspects through a number of them. You get volunteer death, if not dilution of energy. You know, they need to be reviewed for purpose or... change of mandate or even rechartering if needs be. I think from time to time, I can't speak. It's 3 a.m. But the thing I wanted just to make, when you mentioned, you know, the difference between the council and the working group making these decisions, and that the working group clearly needs to be aware that the review is going to go on, something that was really, I think, very worthwhile, even in a code development perspective, in the Domain Name Industry Code of Practice that we did now some 6.5 years ago here in Australia, is it's set by the AUDA board for periodic review, but up until, other than one occasion, the periodic review says everything's fine and we don't need to convene another working group. But the one time when there was exploitation and we needed to tighten up for a consumer protection perspective, we said, and now we're convening a working group and we're going to fix this. So it is important to have it, even if it's just a sort of a pro forma activity from the chartering organisation. It just stays on their agenda and it doesn't slip through.
What I will do is I'll essentially rework 3.1 and the title of it to be broader, so it isn't just about membership but also membership group form. You know, I'll try to incorporate all that together, and I will include some statement in there that we can look at later, and then we can work on the wordsmithing on it. But it gets the idea that there needs to be this sort of semi-annual or annual review or some cycle of review the working group.
And it needs to be advertised and predictable so people know what's going on.
Yeah, and again, we won't say what it is for any particular working group, but we will say it could be something like semi-annual or annual, whatever the chartering organization determines, and that they would put that in that section. Okay, good. I just have called to your attention that it's 1 o'clock, and I don't know if you guys can continue. I feel like this is very, very productive. I don't know if we can go on for a little while longer or what.
Yeah. I've got a fifth glass of red wine for my day.
I'm sorry, Aubrey.
I'm fine for a while. I'd like to add a point on that one.
All right.
Yep.
And there's another termination point that should be understood. Is that once all the deliverables are delivered and decisions have been made relating to those deliverables,
you're out of there.
Right, you blink out of existence unless you've been rechartered.
Oh yeah.
And you don't just have a working group that is now in search of a job.
Do you think, is there or should there be any formal, you are now dechartered, thank you for your work, we appreciate it, da 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 da, or is it, the way you just said that, it sounds like it's a de facto occurrence that's not marked in any way.
Yeah, it probably should be. And I think
it's a very rare situation when that's not the case. Very rare. So if you make it the norm, and then you can have an exception for when you need something to continue because a watching brief is required, or there's ongoing developments, or there's new dependencies coming up, but they should be the exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, and the GNSO Council has several times in various places made decisions that sort of said ceasing to exist is the default condition. And so now they don't cease to exist as soon as they've made their recommendations, because obviously they have to be processed, and you want them to stick around in case there's questions or issues. But once, you know, and I'm not quite sure exactly how you phrase this in a general manner, but once the work is done, you know, the work is done.
Yeah, I think I captured in my notes what the discussion was. Again, I'll throw something in there, and then you guys can say, well, that's not quite what we had in mind. We'll fix it later. But I got the thought down. Okay, good. Now, when I go to Section 3.3, self-selection guidelines, I can tell you where this came from, and we might have already discussed it. I think we did discuss it already. There was something in either the BGC report or somewhere that said people just can nominate themselves to work on a working group, and they don't really need to be in a constituency or this, that, and the other. That's all that was really meant there.
And it comes in under open to the ICANN community further up the pile.
Yeah, so this one, I'm just going to make a note. This is covered in 3.1. Whoops. Uh, Pardon me, I just messed up. That's weird. Okay, 3.4. Team representation, constitution, and roles.
I tend to believe at the top of a charter should be name of chair or chairs, you know, and name of liaison or liaisons. That those two are required parts of any, it can be interim chairs, obviously, but that there need to be chairs and the whole liaison mechanism, which I think is the critical link between the chartering organization and the working group. And, you know, but...
And beyond then, that, yes.
And certainly the role of a liaison needs to be understood in council and in the working groups by a liaison, so maybe having a sentence that describes the role of liaisons and the role of chairs is not a bad thing.
Are you going to define the difference between an independent chair and just a chair?
The chair should be independent. You mean the behavior of a chair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think all chairs should be...
Oh, look, I'd like to live in utopia too, Avery, but I don't.
Well, yeah, and I think, though, that we've... And this is something within the GNSO, and I don't know how it translates. One of the notions that we've been working with is that we accept that every chair, you know, obviously comes to the job with some opinion. And the practice that we've made is that a chair can state his or her opinion, but not argue for it. And it sort of becomes, you know, when you're putting things on the table, the chair can put their thing on the table, but they need to function
neutrally. A chairmanship of something like the GNSO has clear leadership and responsibilities that are slightly more onerous and long-term than a working group chair. You're going to have the need to develop a plethora, and in-service train and support, a plethora of working group chairs. And they need some pretty concise guidelines on what is and is not okay.
Yeah, but does that need to be in the charter?
Well, let me say it this way. What we might want to do is to put it in the guidelines,
yeah,
so that it's thought about as to whether it belongs in a charter.
It's actually more of the selection criteria for who either the interim or full chair and vice chairs of such a working group is.
See, I think that the question we're trying to struggle with is, what recommendations are we making to a potential chartering organization about the team constitution and roles that they should,
yeah,
have?
I mean, the charter needs to name them somewhere else. We need to define how they should be chosen.
Yeah. By the way, Ken, I was just wondering, have you actually read, and you probably have, IETF charters and the, I forget what RFC is, the current one now, on the rules and regulations for a working group?
I did some background reading just based on internet research, looking for material like that. And I think I do remember reading
some,
but it's
because
been a while.
Some of that type of discussion might be useful to borrow. I'm just,
yeah,
thinking in
I
terms
agree.
Of saving effort.
Yeah.
And I know that's not the perfect model for everything, so I'm certainly not suggesting, you know, lifting wholesale, but some of the stuff they mention in there may be useful.
Okay, so I'll check IETF.
And I can send you the RFC number when I look.
Okay, super.
1601? Huh? Isn't it
1601? As I say, I don't remember numbers.
All right,
I went into computer.
So we agree.
And now I've said it, I'm doubting myself. It's all right.
The three of us agree that this section, even if we rename it, certainly I don't think representation works, but team constitution and roles. Okay, so the working group has to have some minimum structure to it, and certain roles we think belong in every working group, like chair and vice chair, whether they have a secretary or not. I said, but we could mention these different roles, and they can choose to put them in their charter or not, right? But the point is, the guidelines would ask drafters to consider these kinds of items. Similarly, you might want to go even so far in writing the charter to say that the chair's duties and roles are as follows, or something like this. So we'll throw enough material in here that would give the drafters good suggestions and best practices around what chairs and vice chairs and other roles. Liaisons, another one that got mentioned, and I noted that we want to specify that, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I think I've got enough material there, and Aubrey, I will appreciate that reference, and I'll drag some stuff in that seems appropriate. We'll have plenty of times to fix it, wordsmith it, and correct it later.
Yeah, I think, though, one of the things we just need to be aware of is that not in ICANN, not in any organization, unless we're going to, and even if we try to hire them, they're still going to come with baggage. That you never have someone that's completely neutral, therefore we have to give them a guideline on how to behave neutrally.
Yep.
Right.
And I'm an incredibly opinionated person, yet I think I've learned to behave neutrally sometimes.
Well, I've certainly noticed that in your work on the drafting team. You've been very very fair-handed in terms of working your way through all those issues.
Thank you. And yet, if you notice me in some other areas when I'm not constrained, I am truly an opinion.
Okay, good. So how about 3-5 now? Let's see. Okay, yeah, again, I don't know where I picked this up from. The question is do people chartering working groups ever have to worry about... And you know what? Maybe we did capture this in 3.1. In the sense in which I create any structure around what the membership of the working group should be, I will have dealt with any worries about capturing and things of that type, right?
Because in there also, I mean, Sean's going to be recommending that a declaration form of interest is standard.
Any other thoughts there? Did we lose Aubrey?
No, you didn't.
What I was thinking is that there probably doesn't need to be a Section 3.5 like this. Maybe I can throw a single sentence into 3.1. So as the charter drafting people are thinking about this thing they're going to create, you know, one of the things to think about is... any worries around security or capture and that kind of stuff in the formation or in the construct of the membership, and that's enough to be said, right? As long as it gets thought of, we're not trying to be prescriptive. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Name me as number 3-6. Okay.
I didn't understand it.
Right.
What are we
okay,
calling
and this is an example of what I was talking about earlier. Right, so here, the reason that the title got shifted to implementation and charter drafting guidelines is because I had in my mind that you'd be talking to a group, a chartering organization, right? And you might be saying to them, you know, what naming structure do you want to put in place and any other conventions or protocols around how you talk about this thing you're creating, this working group? And it's a bit of a subtle point and it may not need to be... It may not need to exist.
Yeah, I guess this is a personal shyness I've got. I have noticed that what we call things is sometimes some of the most controversial subjects, and trying to come up with a convention for naming is.
Yeah, that's not what I had in mind. All I was thinking of is, should we create in the guidelines anything that talks about, not to create a structure for it, but that says when you build the working group, you know, you'll need to give it a name, and if you have any specific conventions around that, you'll need to consider those. But I think that's probably...
Yeah, I can't imagine. Our names... end up things like, you know, inter-registrar transfer part A, you know, and it's really, they're contextually,
yeah.
You know, it's the context you know, and then we end up with abbreviations like PEDNR, you know, that you know, for post expiry deletion things. So I just think that names are almost organic at this point. You know, they just happen.
Okay.
I can now get set down to a set of letters like SICK.
Oh, I love SICK. I think SICK is one of my favorites. I love talking about SICK decisions. It's a great joy.
Okay, 3.7, let me just ask this question. When the chartering organization is going to create a working group, are there announcements and publication questions and issues and things that need to be
brought
through?
I think by and large that's something that's been handled by the secretariat, and I think as long as we have a structure that has this notion of a secretariat, that basically, you know, whatever I can process there happens to be at that moment, and of course it's something that changes over time as ICANN grows and evolves, that these are the way things are announced.
So that, to me, Avery, that means that a little boilerplate piece here again, you know, in this section, relevance should be made to whatever is flavor of the month in ICANN.
If it needs to be there at all, but yes.
Well, actually what I'm thinking in my head right now is that the things that you have tagged meta issues, I'm now getting an aha moment, because what I've done here is I blended two concepts that don't logically connect very well. One is, if you follow through these sections, this outline, every one we've been through so far actually would be a section in a real charter for a real working group, right?
Except for section one.
Yes, exactly. What I'm actually thinking about now is maybe this guidelines document should have section one and section two. Section one would contain any and all meta issues, background, naming issues, whatever we might agree on are the things that would guide the implementation about working groups, but are not in the would not end up in the charter document. And section two would be all those sections and outlines that actually would be map for map, except those that don't apply would actually end up in a charter.
So now it's a template. Yeah, that would probably deal with my issue of this doesn't belong in a charter, but it's fine to discuss it somewhere.
Yeah, that was an aha moment for me. Okay. Every time we identify a meta issue, I'm going to be looking to slide it up to a whole different section that'll be nothing but meta issues.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, we're making progress. Declarations of interest.
Essential, need to be updated.
Yep.
All right, so this belongs in the charter, and...
Yes, a charter should have a statement. Oh, yeah. It's probably a boilerplate statement.
And therefore the guidelines should do it as well, right?
Right.
And this might be something I can grab, too, from IETF.
And as one of, well, no, actually, IETF has no statements of interest.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Because in the IETF, everyone participates. The fiction is everyone participates as an individual. There's no constituencies. There's no, it's a group of individuals, so that's different.
And do we want to, I remember we just talked about earlier on this call that, Glenn, there have been some attempts to, I don't know, standardize, but to create some, a boilerplate. Do you think the guidelines should contain that material around what should go in these declarations?
That's not a bad idea.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also the point that's been made, and it can be made in both the boilerplate and in the stuff, is that there needs to be one on file. You can't write a general one, so you don't have to do one for everything you participate in. And that was an important bit of differentiation that we made in the, I think the PPSC talked about it at some point, or maybe it was just the working group work team. It's hard to know where we talked about something, but.
Okay.
See, Avery, for example, I've now taken to just having, a space about me, and that's what gets updated. And anything I'm declaring just references that. As we move into unified communications and collaborative workspaces, you know, different feeds will also be going into that space saying, you know, what areas of interest I'm focusing on and other stuff. So you actually get richer information if we just ensure that effective and updated and current information is held rather than what you put in on the 23rd of January 2004.
Okay. I try to capture that, those characteristics.
Now, one thing that we do in a couple of our not-for-profit boards that I'm involved in is we have a placeholder in an agenda at the beginning of each meeting, which is a declaration of interest. And that's the opportunity where most people say nothing for everyone at that table to say there's been a change in what they've posted originally.
We have that in agenda, so every council meeting.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I really like that type of thing. It's just a reminder for people to go, oh, yeah, that's right. I've just got that new contract, haven't I?
Okay. Okay to move to 3.9?
Yep.
Now, constituency statements. Yeah, again, kitchen sink item for me. I wasn't really sure. So are declarations of interest by the working group members all that's needed? Because, right, I think we even, the BGC report sort of even talked in the working group model that there's a de-emphasis on constituencies, right?
I think what's important to mention, and this would be in your top section, is that in their working, in their setting of milestones and deliverables, they must take into account community review, be that constituencies or full community. So I think it's important to say somewhere that you have to take in that into account. But again, I don't see it as part of a charter. I think when you're talking about creating milestones, be sure your milestones include time for review. You know,
okay.
And then
okay.
For PDP, for those working groups that are PDP constrained, those particular reviews are defined in bylaw. So you may just want to say, if this, you know, if a working group is a PDP working group, well then, you know, the bylaws define the review requirements. Pay attention to those when you're setting the milestones.
All right. So, but again, all those comments really belong up in the milestones area of the charter, of the guidelines.
I think so. That milestones.
Okay. I agree.
That a working group has to have reviews, and where that becomes tangible for a working group charter is in the definition of milestones. Otherwise, we have a boilerplate statement everywhere that says, "And remember to check with the community."
Yeah. Okay. But the working group doesn't need to, there isn't anything called a constituency sort of statement, like a declaration or anything like that, that needs to be part of this guideline structure.
I don't think so. That's
okay.
The SOIs of the individuals participating, because working groups are at the individual participant level.
Yes, okay. We're good. 3.10, chair facilitator, here we go. Now, I had forgotten that there were, now where am I? We're in section formation, staffing, and organization. Okay. So we talked earlier about what expectations the chair facilitators would need. And let's see. Charlie's include names, chair.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, this is one of your top section things. I think talking about chairs, I think various guidelines, you know, certainly can be given. No one should chair a group that hasn't ever been member of a group, you know. Think if it's going to be an intense work group, think about having co-chairs to share work or vice chairs, whatever model appeals. You know, some questions on behaving neutrally, even though it's legitimate to state your opinion. Things like that.
Well, if guidelines about chair behavior don't appear in a specific working group charter, where would a chair read them?
I think this document that has them in its top section, I think that's fine.
Well, but I'm thinking now, so I'm going to put myself in the position. I have just been asked to be the chair of XYZ working group. I don't know the first thing about any guidelines that anybody's written for anything, right? I've been pulled out either as a consultant or a contract, whatever, or I'm in ICANN and I am now going to chair a working group, and somebody says, here's your charter. And I go, oh, great, got to have a charter. And then I start reading in there, and it says, oh, now, as the chair, you have certain obligations, and these by your chartering organization, you have certain obligations, and they are as follows. You must be neutral. Da, 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 da. That's where I would learn about them, right? Because I wouldn't know anything about a guideline book as a chair.
Well,
unless somebody said, okay, the first two things you have to do as a chair is, here's your charter, and oh, by the way, there's a drafting guidelines document that has some material in it about how chairs should behave, and you need to read section one of that. That would be the other way to do it.
Okay.
But I'm just thinking, it might not be a bad idea if there's boilerplate that we that people could introduce and put into the charter that would guide the chairs, then it's all in one place.
Okay, I guess there's a couple things. One is, I think that if somebody, and this is, again, that's why I say it's a meta comment, I think that if the council or any chartering organization puts somebody in to chair a group who has never chaired before within the organization, there's a real problem.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why in the meta section, I think, you know, you need to have rules of you don't pick a chair who hasn't been a member of a working group before. Then you don't.
You know what? I now I got it. I think this sort of material actually belongs in two places, doesn't it, really? There are meta issues around chair selection, chair expertise, and so forth that doesn't belong. And then there are probably specific behavioral expectations that do belong in the charter,
and
what's happening is they're not being separated here.
And I don't know if they actually belong in the charter. I think you may be describing, as much as I hate to say this, yet another document that is guidelines for chairs, which is a generic, almost, you know, ICANN-wide document.
The chairs handbook,
And, you know, hey, it's more contract time. What are you complaining about?
We could be interviewed, Avery.
Do I have to send you guys commission?
because it's a generic statement about how one behaves when chairing.
That's an interesting observation. Now, but let me just ask you this. What if we took this approach? In the material, in the charter that we talk about roles, right, which we actually covered earlier, we say very little, but just the bare minimum around what these roles are and how they behave. Like, because we wouldn't want to write a liaison handbook too, right, or a vice chair's handbook. Presumably, there might be even other roles that get identified. I see the distinction that you're making there. What if we? I'll try to just put the bare minimum essentials into the role section, and not try to write a chair's handbook.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and again, going back to sort of brevity is best. And then if down the road, if chairs think that they need a separate handbook, well, that's another task, right? That's something could come out of the committees. Well, that'd be our committee. Okay, I'm cool. And I think you're right. 310, as written, expectations for expertise, skills, and select, that is a meta issue, and that does belong in the other section. Okay, I can take a shot at that. How about 311?
I think it's similar.
Yeah.
Council administrative liaison role duties and selection. Okay. So I think that's exactly similar, right? So what we have is we've got a meta issue around the liaison, but the charter itself would say very little about what the liaison's role actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to move this up to meta issue also, meta section. And it won't say a lot about it. Yeah, I think this is going to make a lot more sense architecturally when we get finished with it.
Oh, I see. I was so presumptuous as to even give a template of what I thought a charter would look like.
Yeah, at the bottom, right. Yeah, you did.
I forgot I'd done that.
I left it in there because I didn't want to lose it. Okay, expert advisors and consultants, same sort of thing.
Yeah. And I do, to answer your question, if we do bring in an outsider to chair something, I sincerely hope that whoever gives them also gives them this handbook when they give them the charter.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be insane not to. And anyone that you picked as a chair, if they didn't go looking for it, I would wonder about.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Now we're into rules of engagement. If there's a better title, I'm happy to pick it up.
I actually like the warlike in.
Okay. Now, obviously, these. Okay. Yeah. So the question or the concept, my comment here is, yeah, does this belong? And my thinking was that to the extent that the charter drafters, the charter organization, sponsor, whoever, has any specifications, this would be where they would put them, not requiring that they do. They might say, all you need is a mission, deliverables, and off you go. But if so the question might be, for example, we've had this discussion around what the meaning of consensus is. If the charter had to do with PDP or something that was really, it was really important that the working group followed a specific set of decision-making guidelines, this would be where I'd put them.
Okay, I can see that. So as an optional section, when required either by PDP bylaws or charter in group.
Yes.
Yeah, and to be honest, under normal circumstances, it's sort of the first order of business for the working group itself to establish.
Yes, exactly. So the idea was only in those cases where the chartering said, we're not leaving these decisions to you.
It's clearly not a default.
Right.
An exception.
Okay. Then 4.1 says, would deal with decision-making methodologies. And I'm not sure there's a lot that we need to say is other than if there are decision-making methodologies that the chartering organization wants to specify, put them in this section.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Now, this is, you know, and see, I'm not sure how far, and this is almost a PPSC question, is basically making a decision that, you know, all working groups function on rough consensus unless specified otherwise, or all working groups function on, full consensus unless specified otherwise, whether that kind of statement, A, needs to be in a charter, and B, needs to be made. It probably needs to be made, and just not sure to what extent it needs to be in a charter.
Yeah, I agree, Avery. I really think, again, this is one of those, it either comes from the instigating body, or it sits as a first order of business for the working group itself.
Right.
Yeah, the way I would write it, essentially that way, Cheryl, just exactly, that say, you know, under normal circumstances, you know, the working group would make its own rules about decision-making methodologies, unless, however, if the charting organization needs it to be a specific way, then you would say so here, and that it would not go to a default situation.
But, you know, one of the things that I think we need to define somewhere and are in the process of getting defined and processed is sort of what kind of content shows up out of a working group, and that no matter what decision process you've made, the reports coming out have to show that, you know, all points of view were dealt with, et cetera.
Yeah, I think we're going to cover that in a minute.
Yeah.
I don't happen to be looking. I walked away from my computer and don't happen to be looking at it.
Yeah, it's a couple sections down, and I think we're going to cover. All right, so are we okay on this one? I mean, we think it belongs in the guidelines. It's going to be an optional, only when required, and if it's there, it's there. If it's not, then the working group makes its own decisions. Okay, the next one was council versus working group responsibilities. So to the extent that the chartering organization wants to specify different levels of accountability or something, I'm not sure exactly what I had in mind. What did I have in mind here? Probably not worth fussing over this one. I mean, the charter is going to tell the working group what its responsibilities are, and
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't really. Yeah, I've lost that one. I'm going to delete that one.
Excellent move, Ken.
Okay, 4.3. Okay, status reporting. You guys will have to help me here as to... So in a rules of engagement, one of the things that the chartering organization wants to say is, we want reports this frequently and that with this kind of content, and it's, we're not saying what that should be, just that this is where you would do that kind of thing.
And from whom?
And that's where I was saying, basically, that is, I see one of the liaison's roles is to, you know, be available, to be able to give a monthly status or essentially monthly status update. And we may want to add the thing we talked about earlier of, you know, the working group itself giving a, you know, formal status report, you know, every 6 months or 3 weeks before every, you know, ICANN meeting or, actually, I kind of like that one. You know, I mean, I won't accept anybody telling me I have to report 3 weeks before, but working groups, sure, they should report 3 weeks before.
Okay, I've captured that. I think that's working.
Right, and if it's put into the charter that, you know, part of accepting a working group is, you know, that that liaison monthly and the group, you know, chair's report, as it were.
Yeah, and the chair's report doesn't need to be in the same, you know, periodicity. It can be, you know,
the chair's report is probably, I know from my perspective as GNSO chair, you know, I ask for one to be given to the council at each of the face-to-face meetings.
Okay. All right, I'll take a shot at getting some content in there, again, paragraph or two at the most, and then we'll have something we can work on. 4.4, problem issue escalation and resolution process.
Right. And that's something that we've got extensively in the current one, because there has to be a whole appeals mechanism.
All right, so when you say the current one, you're talking about the
That basically,
the one we used that actually we worked, the working team's charters were done from it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That basically that, and I think that needs to be a standard thing that is pointed to, unless there's an exceptional basis, but I think that has to be pretty much the same for everyone, would be my view, that we need to have a well-known and practiced...
Well, there's two thoughts just occurred to me. One is that the charter will specify what escalation and issue resolution processes the chartering organization wants them to exercise. Then I'm asking the separate question is, is it a meta issue that goes up somewhere else that generally guides sponsoring organizations around resolution processes, or should we just leave it here in as a charter item and not a meta issue? Am I making that? Was that clear?
I'm confused.
Yeah, so we're trying to separate out the things that we actually want to write in the charter,
right,
and things that we want sponsoring organizations to generally consider as they implement working groups, specific or generally.
Yeah, and in this one I'm saying that I think that certainly for GNSO, and since that's what we're currently writing this for, that there should be a reference to a standard set of escalation processes that can either be included by reference or by
Boilerplate.
Oh, by boilerplate, you know, and that's, but that they really need to be the same.
Yeah, I like that.
For all groups.
That works. I got it. That's great. So what, once we could, for now, we'll put the boilerplate right in here in 4.4, and so we'll have it to look at, and it'll be right here. We could decide that, you know, this ought to just be a standalone document with a link, and then all that goes into the charter is the reference to it.
Yeah,
so that the charters end up not being hammered
by... I like
by...
green charters.
Yeah. So that's cool. Oh, well, look at this. I can't believe it, but this is the last one.
That was, or we have one more?
We have one more.
Oh, okay.
4.5, closure and post-deliberation analysis and self-assessment. So, and I don't, again, I don't know whether or not this is something that working groups should be or frequently asked to do, or that there's an actual engagement step here or not.
Yeah.
The way I wrote it is, if the sponsors want a working group to provide feedback in the prescribed manner, the charter would so indicate in this section. If they don't, they just simply ignore it.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm happy with that.
Okay.
I think it's always good to have these, you know, postpartum reviews or postmortem reviews.
Yeah, I like postmortem to postpartum, certainly.
Well, it really depends on whether you've produced something that's living or produced something that's dead.
Right. Okay, I didn't have any other content sections that occurred to me, and I was trying to be as exhaustive as I could think in terms of what could go in. You know, Avery, I just, for whatever reason, I did not pick up in this copy paste your let's just quickly run down your name of the group. We got chair, liaison,
advisors, URLs of work groups,
etc. Have a
formal repository, details of description of task, details of definition of scope, deliverables with dates, non-deliverable milestones with dates, working group history dates, first chartered and original delivery date listed, renewal dates listed, and dates of negotiated changes listed.
Actually, there are a few items in there that I think will fit that weren't specifically mentioned, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to copy this and paste it in my document also. I'm going to see if I can accommodate those items where they belong. I think our document outline incorporates places for this stuff to go.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think that was necessarily adding stuff. I was just trying to get away from all our conversation and just sort of list an outline.
You just did your own brainstorm on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anything that has less than 7 subpoints always makes me happy.
Those have more than 7.
No, I like less.
Okay, then we have to get rid of some stuff.
They can be subbed, but, you know, 7 is pretty much as much. Because I'm spending way too much time in certain areas. But, yeah, 7 is handled by the human brain really well.
Yeah, I've heard that before, yeah.
8 gets to be a challenge.
Okay. This has been great, guys. I've really got a great set of... I think I want to get busy working on it. I'm energized.
You inspired him.
You've inspired me to get moving. I was really worried before the call that I don't know how we're going to reconcile these comments and all this stuff. It seemed like a morass to me, but boy, we really went through it nicely, and it's all making good sense to me. I hope I can do justice to it in the next draft.
Fantastic.
Now what I'm inclined to do is to put up a document that is a draft of the charter guidelines.
The draft.
Without all these comments. I mean, I'm taking all that stuff out now, right? We're moving to the next phase.
What I'd recommend doing, what I've always done on the wikis, is I just create a old page, and I just cut and paste everything from this to the old page. So the history is still there.
Okay.
If anybody ever wants to go back to it, but it's in a separate subordinate wiki page that's got history.
Done.
And then I just cut and paste as I go along. I just keep taking out the old crust and leaving the new.
But we're okay with starting with without destroying anything that was there. We're okay with starting with a brand new, fresh document.
Absolutely.
As long as there's a pointer to the old, I think we're fine.
Okay. Yep. There will be a pointer to the old.
We all need to go and look at Google Wave when we have spare time.
Yeah.
I wrote that down in Google Translate.
As I said, I'm enough of a geek that anytime somebody points me at a new toy, I'm ready to use it immediately.
Somebody pointed a new one at me, and I haven't looked at it yet, but it's called Jive, J-I-V-E.
Okay.
Actually, Mark Salvatera just told me about this yesterday. I got the site for you. It's www.jivesoftware.com. And I haven't looked at it, but he said this might be, because the policy staff's been looking for a collaboration tool. We will look at Wave also, but he said, oh, you want to look at Jive.
I'm looking at Jive now, so I'll get back to you. But
okay. That's all I want to do is pass it along. Like I said, I have it up on my screen, but I haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah,
it was on my list to do when the call came up.
Just The fact that, Wave is designed by the guys who came up with the idea of Google Maps, impresses me to begin with. But the fact that it's totally open source and they've said, here you are, developers, go play in our sandpit and make your APIs, and it will be interoperable, and it will be interactive, and it will be updatable, and it won't be proprietary. Gets back to my old open source core, which I'm very pleased about.
And that matters a lot, and the volunteer organization is, because I can't use like Adobe stuff.
That's right.
Because I can't afford Adobe stuff. I mean, I can be a client when we have a meeting, but I can't use it.
Yeah.
And anything I'd have to pay for as a volunteer, I can't use.
Yeah, and this is why I'm really excited about what the boys and girls have released with Wave, because it's very much a matter of, you can go and make an independent bit, and it will interoperate.
It's
guaranteed.
You want phone too.
So, you know, that just sort of hits right to my core values. So I'm not often excited, but I'm excited about this.
I've already sold my soul to Google, so it doesn't matter.
Well, listen.
I use a Google phone. I use a G1 phone.
They
already own me.
Great.
Thank you guys very much. This was great. I'll send a little note around to the larger working group team, just indicating we've had this session and what we accomplished, and that I've taken on a little duty here on behalf of the team. I think that Liz will be happy with that, and we will actually have made some nice progress.
Okay. Can I just react on Jive? Anything that starts talking to me about social business revolutions and manifestos immediately has me concerned.
Oh,
I'm not selling it, Cheryl. I just pass it along.
Does a manifesto make you want to stand up and salute and sing the Internationale?
There's a lot of marketing stuff that goes into these things that is leaves me cold also.
Oh, shit, yeah. Bye.
All right, guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, Cheryl.